Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Hello, everybody. I am absolutely thrilled to be with my very great friend, co-conspirator and co-maker of Radioactive Global Mischief, Karen Baker. Look, you've been asking who I think are the major teachers on the planet now, the major guides to what we're going through. Carolyn is absolutely one of them, and someone on whose wisdom I have relied for now 20 years. I first met Carolyn through reading her extraordinary book, Sacred Demise, The Collapse of Western Civilization, and through God's grace, we met and became joined at the hip and did four books together, Return to Joy, Savage Grace, Saving Animals for Ourselves and From Ourselves, and Radical Regeneration. And the collection of those books coming out in one volume in October or November. So hooray for that. But we're here to celebrate her absolutely amazing and indispensable new book, Undaunted, which has the formidable subtitle, Living Fiercely into Climate Meltdown in an Authoritarian World. Let me just tell you something about Carolyn Baker, because the point of doing this interview with her is to throw her glorious work into the roiling mix of our coming together in this global emotion meltdown that we're in. And I would love it if you could not only read her work, but also get her extraordinary website, her daily
digest,
my words, because I'm so excited. And really get that, because if you do, you'll be informed as to what is happening. Karen's done this heroic work for years of every morning bringing together the most important pieces of news about how the climate meltdown and all the different crises in our worlds are going. It is indispensable for those of you, and I hope by now it's all of you, who want to remain informed about what's happening so you can bring the best of yourselves to meet it.
And I might just add there, Andrew, that at the end of the end of each edition, there is an inspiration section, and the banner at the top is bearing witness to the light and the dark.
Right. One of the beautiful things about what you do is that you hit us with the dark, but you always give us tools to deal with that dark and inspiration and fun and joy. So let me just read you this comprehensive description of who she is. Carolyn Baker, PhD, was a psychotherapist in private practice for 17 years and a professor of psychology and history for 10. She's the author of 15 books, including Navigating the Coming Chaos, A Handbook for Inner Transition, Sacred Demise, Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse, and Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse. She's also co-authored five books with Andrew Harvey. She manages her website at www.carolynbaker.net and publishes a subscription-based daily news digest, which is a collection of news stories and inspiration focusing on the global crisis and options for navigating disruptive times. Carolyn also offers life coaching and spiritual counseling for people who want help with navigating the unprecedented challenges of our time. she could be contacted, and please contact her, because I have sent innumerable people to Karen for spiritual coaching. People who are waking up to the horror of what we're living, and who told me again and again that they found in her a rock of ages, a real elder who is able to allow them to feel the full extent of their feelings, but also who's constantly, tenderly but firmly urging people to bring their whole spirit to meet what we're facing. She could be contacted at Carolyn at Carolyn Baker, C-A-R-O-L-Y-N, at carolynbakersmallc.net. Please, 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 my friends, avail yourself of the massive, sober, brilliant resources that this heroic woman, against great odds, has given us. No one is more prescient than Carolyn. No one has faced the crisis more head on than Carolyn, and no one has given us at this moment when we need them desperately the kind of practical, simple tools that we all need to deal with what is, as all of you now know, I hope, a global dark night of species. So welcome, my darling. I'm thrilled to be with you. And I'd love to begin by just reading a couple of paragraphs from the end of your book about this planetary initiation, so people can have a sense of the extraordinary tone in which this book, Undaunted, is written. Carolyn's tone is absolutely laser-like, precise, sober, but laced with a secret, unillusioned joy. And that, to me, is the ultimate tone of the elder. And Carolyn is our great elder. So here is Madame. I love to call her Madame because she's one strong person. If you work with Carolyn, you realize that. And I've been so privileged for my friendship with you, my darling. When we understand that we are engaged in a planetary rite of passage, our view widens and our perspective is enlarged. Our view from, as they say, 35,000 feet informs our actions and makes them more strategic. If this is an initiation, since there are no solutions, there are only responses. That does not mean we do nothing or simply give up and abdicate our responsibility. We continue to act, but we act as well-informed initiates, passing through an ordeal in which we daily surrender the ego to the self and allow our gifts to be unleashed on behalf of the self and the earth community. If we view our predicament as an initiation, we can accept climate meltdown and the collapse of systems more fully. Earlier, I noticed Francis Weller's perspective of becoming an apprentice of sorrow. Is it not utterly urgent that we become apprentices of our predicament? Only by doing so can we experience the benefits of becoming its students. Let me be clear, as if you ever weren't absolutely clear. Let me be clear, I am not implying that the transformation of consciousness that comes as a result of planetary or personal initiation is going to spare us from experiencing the consequences of our estrangement from and disrespect of nature. Furthermore, I do not wholeheartedly resonate with the notion that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. It is equally true that we are human beings having spiritual experiences that our souls crave, but that does not make us any less human. Richard Tarnas, in his book, Is the Modern Psyche Undergoing a Rite of Passage?, asks, are we going to make it? And writes, we cannot be completely sure that we will. No authentic initiatory process begins in the certainty of its outcome. It is not at all certain that we will successfully pass through the eye of the needle, this planetary ego death. for the foreseeable future, we seem to be living in an era of high drama. We seem to be engaged now in a kind of race between initiation and catastrophe. Then Carolyn writes this absolutely crucial passage, which is the key to the magnificence of this book and the courage of this book and the indispensable necessity of this book. She writes, "From my perspective, are we going to make it is the wrong question. I must return to the only two questions that matter. Who do I want to be, and what did I come here to do? Who would I want to be, and what did I come here to do?" Carolyn, could you define for us what you mean by initiation in terms of our global dark night? Because that's truly the key to facing this and to finding the answers to those two absolutely challenging and marvelous questions.
Well, thank you for that question. You know, initiations or rites of passage have been with us for thousands of years in indigenous cultures. Western culture has just not employed that rite at all. We've been very estranged from it. Now, back in the late 19th century, Carl Jung traveled around to a number of indigenous cultures, and he studied their rites of passage because he was incredibly fascinated by the whole notion of the rite of passage. And he came back from his travels and he said, "We Westerners don't have these literal rites, but what we have are symbolic initiations. We go through divorces. We face a terminal diagnosis. We lose a job. We lose a body part. We have all of these cataclysms going on in our lives.
We're betrayed by a lover, yes.
Betrayed by a lover is only one of many. And so we are faced with a similar ordeal as the young person going through a rite of passage in an indigenous culture. And so he wrote a lot about how do we cope with that? Well, the first thing is we accept it.
Right.
Young people in an indigenous culture are prepared from birth for their initiatory experience. We have no preparation whatsoever. But our work is to say, okay, I've never been through this before. I've not been prepared for this, but I'm going to step up to this challenge, this invitation, actually, and I'm going to use all of the resources I have internally, and I'm going to allow this ordeal to teach me. I'm going to become a student of it, so that I can learn what it intends for me to learn. What we don't do, what we must not do is say, well, I don't need this initiation because that's uncomfortable and it's not light all the time. I have to face the darkness and I'm a spiritual being who should not have to go through this. That is to throw away an enormous gift. And so if we are willing to go through and respond to the invitation, which is not easy and for which we will need a lot of support, we come through. And it may not look like coming through as we would imagine it, but we will be transformed. We will not be the same person. And then we will come to the point of asking those two questions. Who do I want to be as I go through this? And what did I come here to do? Right. How can I help other people who are going through it or don't even know they're going through it? So let's not waste the invitation by saying, I'm just too spiritual for that.
You know, and we've talked about this through countless hours of divine ranting, just how many enemies and saboteurs there are in our culture. to prevent us from being brave enough, open enough to accept an initiation as vast as this global dark night. And you know that one of the greatest enemies is fake spirituality, New Age spirituality.
Yes. Yes.
And I would love if you spoke to that from your point of view.
Well, I was involved in New Age spirituality for a period of time in the 80s because I came from a very traumatized family and a very traumatizing religion. You know, where you
evangelical spirituality, evangelical fundamentalist Christianity,
yes.
My God, yes.
Yes, yes. In which you were constantly fed the notion that you're evil and sinful, and what must I do for God to love me? And I'm an imperfect creature, and blah, 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 blah. And if I don't toe the line and do all the things I'm supposed to do, I'll burn in hell. So New Age spirituality to me was very appealing. Liberating, in fact. Who would not want to be constantly told you're perfect when you've had this upbringing of you're a sinner, you're lost, you're going to hell, you're a worm, you know, all of that. So it was very appealing. But it had very diminishing returns. It was a nice high for a while. But it really didn't help me resolve the pain that was within me, the trauma that was within me. I needed to go deeper into myself and into the perennial wisdom that I am now so fond of, which has really carried me through so many things. And so I would just say that, you know.
In fact, can I intervene? Because
sure.
What you did was two very important things. You plunged into a serious transpersonal Jungian analysis.
Yes.
And you aligned with indigenous wisdom as taught by the great Malidoma Samain. I would love you if you could talk about those two and how they shaped your worldview and gave you the tools that you're so passionate about giving to others.
Well, yes. At the age of 40, my life fell apart, you know, and all of this spiritual woo-woo was not, you know, not doing it for me. And I was compelled to go deeper into myself and look at my pain. And so I was in Jungian therapy for, you know, a dozen years or more. And in that process, I learned a lot about the indigenous perspective of life. And one of my great teachers at that time was Malidoma Samain.
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, and I spent a great deal of time on a particular Native American reservation where I saw the light and the dark all mixed together. It was never separate. And in that process, I gleaned a lot of indigenous wisdom, not actually setting out to do so, but it just came to me as I sat with and appreciated and savored, you know, this perspective on life and realized that in my therapy, actually my therapy was a profound rite of passage that went on for not just a few days as it traditionally does in indigenous culture, but for years and years and years. And I wouldn't trade the time or the money for that experience because it profoundly changed me and everything in my life. And so I look back now on the New Age spirituality and, you know, it served me at that time to move me beyond the terrible punishment orientation of the religion I was brought up with. But it was infantile in many ways. You know, it was like drinking pablum. And I grew to eat the substantial nutrients of an inner rite of passage and an inner transformation that I could not have had without the Jungian therapy and the indigenous teachings.
you've often, as I have often been accused, of spreading gloom and doom. And one of the things that we've met repeatedly is the resistance of the spiritual world to the shadow, to any mention of the necessity of becoming a real citizen, of really taking up spiritual arms against the injustice and craziness of the world. What has always struck me about your work is its rugged, truthful joy, its ability to see the horror without capitulating to the horror. Because the very way in which you witness the dark so unflinchingly is itself an act of tremendous courage that breeds joy, not a joy that's based on any false hope, but a joy that's based on the strength of true spirit. So I would love you to, if you could address the kinds of objections that your work has arisen, and how you have dealt with that animosity and that antagonism. And what has given you the strength, the extraordinary strength that I so love in you, of being able to truck on whatever rubbish is hurled against you? What made you so adamantine?
Well, I'm not sure. It's a combination of gifts, I guess. I believe that I've come into the world with many gifts, as we all have. And that some of those that you mentioned are my gifts, and I have other gifts as well. But, you know, I want to say a little bit of clarification about that word joy, because as you know, and I know from writing our book, Return to Joy, it's really important to distinguish between happiness and joy.
Absolutely.
Happiness is this circumstantial feeling that we have when things are going well. I get a new boyfriend, girlfriend. I buy a new house. I get a promotion. I lose a lot of weight, and I go to the gym, and I have a killer body, yada, yada, yada. So I feel happy. But that's circumstantial, you know. If those things aren't...
And it comes and goes.
Comes and goes.
Depending on circumstances.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, if I don't have those things, I'm not going to feel so happy. But joy is much deeper than that. Joy actually lives in our core. And we can tap into it. And we can strengthen it. And we can build it like a muscle if we tap into that inner core. That inner core includes the reality that suffering is a part of life. That's the first principle of Buddhism. And one of my great role models for this has always been, as you know, Viktor Frankl.
Absolutely.
Who was sitting in Auschwitz and realizing that all of his family around him was dying. And he had some special privileges because he was a physician, but he was still in the middle of hell. And he writes about tapping into this core within him, which really was accessible to him by finding meaning in this horrible situation every day.
That is the key of keys.
Absolutely.
Joy comes from finding the meaning in
yes.
what you're going through and enacting that meaning.
Yes, yes. And by, you know, he didn't just find meaning for himself, but he was able to serve his fellow inmates. And, you know, actually there were times when they were happy. You know, it sounds crazy, but they told jokes. They made each other laugh, you know, but always there was this suffering around them that compelled them, particularly Viktor, to go inside and be with the meaning of all of this. That's what got him through. And in that sense, he, without even verbalizing it or maybe even realizing it, was going through a rite of passage. And he chose to be a student of it by finding the meaning in his experience. And then when the ordeal was passed, he devoted his life to helping other people find meaning. He devised a type of therapy called logotherapy, which was all about finding and cultivating meaning and then sharing that with others.
And this really gets to the core of Undaunted, doesn't it?
It does.
Because in Undaunted, you address fearlessly the two major crises that are coming together in such a horrific and testing way in our time. The first crisis that you address, as you've addressed it again and again and again in your work so magnificently, is climate meltdown, climate catastrophe. And one of the strongest points you make, and have made in many ways for years, but make it most clearly and most undauntedly in this book, is that if we're going to find meaning in the potential collapse of nature and human extinction, the potential of human extinction, we're going to have to find the strength to feel our dark emotions, to open to fear, to anguish, to agony, to outrage, and find a way of really living with them and extracting from them core meaning, core truth. Yes. And one of the great stupidities of New Age mysticism and some of the Eastern mysticisms too, which demonize anger, demonize emotion, is that they prevent us from this gorgeous and terrible process. They try and tell us that this process is unnecessary. We have to leap beyond into the transcendent, not deal with our humanness. But it's in dealing with these emotions that we find meaning. Can you speak to that in your own words, Maldon?
Well, absolutely. And I'd like to just begin my answer with a quote from Stephen Jenkinson, who is the author of a book called Die Wise. And Stephen Jenkinson was a palliative care worker for about 20 to 30 years, somewhere in that vicinity. And he watched a lot of people die. And one of the quotes that I love, which, you know, I didn't get it before I wrote this book, but, you know, if I were to rewrite the book, I would have to include it. He said, "We're living in terribly turbulent times. We can see that as an affliction or as an assignment."
Wow. An affliction or an assignment.
Exactly.
How magnificent.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So we are being given an assignment with this crisis. Now, when you're given an assignment, you don't say, "Oh, well, you know, this is just too dark. I'd rather not do this assignment." Well, you can say that, but you'll flunk out of the class or flunk out of college. You know, you are a student, presumably. You know, the people that you teach, the people that I teach, they call themselves students. And if you are a student, then you are asked to step up to the assignment. And the assignment here is to go deeper within yourself, to view this as a rite of passage. And when that young person is out there in the ordeal of a rite of passage in the wilderness.
Right. In the indigenous situation, you don't say, "I'm not going to go through this ordeal. It seems a little too terrifying for me. I'd rather jump around and play soccer." That's not what happens.
Right. And if you did that, the elders would take you to task and say, "Young man, young woman, you don't understand what being in this tribe is about. This
exactly.
is required. And if you don't go through this process, I'm sorry, but you can't be in our tribe, because not to go through this process makes you toxic.
It makes you dangerous because don't know, and makes you unable to give all that you are and have to us." Because what the initiations will teach you is two things. They'll teach you how hard and harsh life can be, and they will also help you find the kinds of resourcefulness, resilience, and courage that lie within you to respond to this.
Right.
And if you don't go through the initiation, you're of no use to us, because we're living in reality and you're living in Cloud Cuckoo Land, La La Land.
Right. Yeah. And actually, it would be put to the young person as, we need you. Right. We need you to do this. And if you don't do this, you become dangerous. And here are all the benefits if you go through this. Now, it was truly an ordeal.
Right.
It was a life-threatening ordeal. And
right.
There were occasions in which a young person did not survive, but that didn't stop the tribe from saying, we must continue this practice because it is absolutely necessary for all of us to go through this.
I remember speaking to Bob Randall, who was the Dalai Lama of the Aborigines, right. with whom I met made two films, and Bob described to me some of the stuff that they'd had to go through, and it took the top of my head off.
Right.
And I said to him, are you grateful for what you had to go through? It sounds so extreme. And he started to cry. He said, grateful doesn't begin to do it. I could never have realized my life. I could never have poured out what I have poured out. I could never have been able to serve my people as relentlessly as I've served my people had I not gone through this. And in the end, the initiations, what you're calling the assignments, go provide the courage, energy, and the rugged joy to live an honorable life of radical service to the world.
Yeah. And to be able to begin to look at your life as a series of rites of passage. You
right.
know, I'm in this big one right now. We all are in this big one right now of climate catastrophe, climate chaos, global economic collapse, whatever you want to call all of this global crisis. We're in the big one. But every day to wake up and say, okay, what are my rites of passage for today?
What's my assignment today?
What's my assignment today?
Who am I going to be today? How am I going to turn up? What am I going to do to help the world
exactly.
in the ways that life presents themselves?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely. But that difficulty, the difficulty that our global dark night presents us all is that the emotions that it inevitably arises in us are so extreme.
Yeah.
Extreme heartbreak,
yes.
extreme outrage, extreme fear, extreme stress, extreme
yes.
anxiety.
Yes.
And one of the great strengths of Undaunted is that you tackle this head on. Talk yeah. about, for example, anxiety.
Sure.
You have that wonderful quote from David Children on anxiety, but help us understand how we can deal with our anxiety.
Well, number one, we really need support.
Yes.
And particularly in grief, which we all need to be cognizant of right now. What is our grief? What is our sorrow? And what's our anxiety? What's our anger? What's our fear? And realize that we can't do this alone. You know, of course we're going to run out and escape through some technology.
Sex, drugs, rock and roll, distraction, anything.
Right, right. Of course we are, because we are feel alone in this, and these emotions are really difficult to bear. So we need each other. We need to have groups where we can just come online and or go over to somebody's house and talk about it, you know, and feel our humanness together. That's one thing. Journaling is a very important thing. Spending time in nature where we just go out and we bathe, you know, the forest bathing book.
Yes.
Where we just go out and bathe in the glory and the beauty of nature. And
the beauty of the arts, the inspiration of sacred mystical arts. Poets, to really know that inspiration is the oxygen of our thriving survival.
And one of the arts that I'm highly recommending now is poetry.
Yes.
Poetry is really making a comeback. And there are so many glorious poets on this earth. Of course, my favorite these days is Mary Oliver. But to use all of that to gather all the inspiration and external support that you can in doing this. But you have work to do. You know, not avoidance to pursue, but work to do as you accept this assignment of being alive on this planet in 2022.
The other great theme of your book, and I am so grateful that you made it so central, is, of course, the rise of authoritarianism.
Yeah.
And the book that you wrote previously to this, which is one of my absolute favorites of your work, is called Christo-Fascism. And if you haven't read that book, please read this book, because it gives you the key to everything that's now happening before our eyes in our culture, when democracy is being assaulted on every level.
Confronting Christo-Fascism is the
exactly.
title of the
Something
book.
You know a great deal about, because you were incubated in the furnace of Christo-Fascism, the right. evangelical church, and its horrible alliance with the chaotic madness of the Republicans, especially when Trump came along. What is, in your opinion, the basic reason for this rise of authoritarianism in this country? And why are so many people, even now, even with all the evidence before us that the infrastructure of fascism is being put into place, why are so many people in denial? And how dangerous is that denial?
So
those are three juicy questions for you. But go for it, because nobody tackles this like you tackle this.
Well, I think it's important to look at this. We have to look at this historically. The right-wing evangelical branch of Christianity has always wanted to create a theocracy, a
right.
government by God, okay? So that people will live and think and behave according to them. Now, in confronting Christo-Fascism, I take us back to the late 19th century, where all of this kind of began. But it really was given air. It was really gasoline was thrown on the fire by Reagan.
Napalm.
In 1980, when Reagan came to power, the right-wing fundamentalists saw this as an opportunity to make inroads to create this theocracy through the Republican Party. And our friend Frank Schaeffer has written and talked exhaustively about how he and his nepotistic sidekick, his father, Frank Schaeffer, Francis Schaeffer, helped fan this fire that just grew and grew and grew over 40 years. And they saw Trump as the ultimate opportunity to fan the fires even more, to throw napalm on it, as you say. And so we need to understand this, which is why I wrote Confronting Christo-Fascism, in order to deal with it. And part of the dealing with it is, at its root, fundamentalist Christianity says education is not important. The
right.
only education you need is the Bible. And you can go to a Christian college or university and learn more about the Bible, but any other kind of education really isn't that important. So we've had this gradual dumbing down.
Attack on science, attack on any kind of understanding of American history, which is now everywhere. Yes.
Yeah. And so, I just read it again this morning. I read it a couple of days ago, but I read again this morning how in Arizona now, the governor is saying, well, people don't really have to have college degrees to teach our students. And so what does that mean? Well, that means that a person, a teacher, isn't that well educated. And his or her job is simply now to follow orders. And, when you're not that, when you don't prize education and learning, and critical thinking in particular, you are dumbed down. And so facts don't really mean anything. Facts, you know, what's a fact, you know? And so what we see now is an increasing amount of our population in the United States not even knowing what a fact is and could care less what a fact is. And so despite all the evidence, you say, well, you know, I have my evidence over here. Your evidence is wrong because you're a left-wing crazy liberal. But my evidence over here tells me that Democrats are, you know, molesting children and killing them and drinking their blood. That's my evidence. And I don't care about your evidence. I mean, there is no standard of reality. And this has all been brought about by fundamentalist Christianity in concert with billionaire corporate capitalists who really love what their fundamentalist project is about, because it's going to bring them a control of technology. It's going to bring them all kinds of corporate
profits. It's going to create a dumbed down slave class that can be manipulated by the power of the media.
Absolutely.
We're living in a time in which even the Supreme Court is put in place by dark money. This is not something that you and I have invented. This is something that has been documented. So even the laws, as we can see clearly by the abandonment of Roe versus Wade, even the laws of the country are now being shaped by this horrific agenda.
And everyone needs to read Jane Mayer's Dark Money.
Yes.
Jane Mayer, who writes for The New Yorker, read her book, Dark Money. And I am telling you, Andrew, my gay brother, and everyone out there, that marriage equality is next on the chopping block, as well as contraception. Now, I mean, here we are in 2022, talking about you won't be able to have freedom of contraception to acquire it when you need it. And, you know, that is 11th century mentality.
But it's not only those rights which would be terrifying enough. That in full public view, they're going to change the whole voting system to make it impossible for fair elections, to ensure that a marginalized, insane right wing gets power again and again and again, which is the birth of a very particular, insane, unbelievably powerful American fascism. Yes. And since America does everything on crack, it will do fascism on crack.
Absolutely.
And that crack American fascism will be simply the most dangerous fascism the world's ever seen. And it will coincide with the rise of authoritarianism everywhere in the world. Duterte, Bolsonaro, Orban, rah, 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 the Myanmar militia, China, Russia. And that will be the end of the planet, because authoritarian regimes are grifter regimes. They have absolutely no concern for justice, no concern for the environment, no concern for the structure of the economy, no concern for anything but their own power. And that will only expedite our extinction.
Yes.
So one of the most important things in your book is the ways in which you give us strategies and tools to begin to see how dangerous this authoritarianism is, to invite us to actually accept that it's going on right now and is threatening us right now, and to be able to rise to it strategically.
And I want to say it is really, really important for all of us to be informed.
Absolutely. What would you invite people to read? Because always give good books, babe.
I will say that, I will tell you that, but I will also, I want to preface my remarks by saying, I know, because I publish the news every day, I know how difficult it is to look at much of what's happening. I know that. And I don't encourage people. I have a whole chapter in the book called Titrating Wokeness. I don't encourage people to go headlong into the news and never take a break and, you know, and just burn themselves out. I appreciate that you need breaks. And maybe one day you just can't watch the news. You know, I got to go kind of apart and retreat here and catch my breath and, you know, deepen my spiritual connection. And then I can go tomorrow. I can look at the news. So it's really important that we understand that part of being a good citizen is being informed. Part of being a good citizen is being informed. So I would strongly recommend books by Timothy Snyder. And one of his main books is On Tyranny. It's 20 strategies for coping with impending fascism. Another writer on the same vein is a woman named Ruth Ben-Gvir. She's a professor at Columbia.
How do you spell her last name?
Ben-Gvir.
She's tremendous.
Yes. And there are several others now that are talking about, but it's important to understand the fascist movement is taking place all over the world. And it's going to have a unique flavor in the United States. And it's going to be, I think, pretty bloody, ultimately. I watch MSNBC a lot. Sometimes it's like, okay, I've heard this before. But for example, tonight, as we make this recording today, on July 21st, the last scheduled January 6th committee hearings are happening on prime time. Now, there will probably be more hearings before they finish it all up in the fall. But this one is really important, because it's going to take a look at the 187 minutes that the attack on the Capitol was taking place on January 6th. What was happening during that time? What was Trump doing or not doing? What were other people doing or not doing, people high up in the government system? And we need to know these things. I'm sorry, I get very passionate about this. We need to know these things. Not that everything on MSNBC is gospel truth, but I believe that MSNBC and CNN are doing their best to give us an accurate picture, as accurate as possible.
We can't use our spirituality to sign off from our responsibility as citizens, because they're directly interconnected. And if we pretend that we're so enlightened that we don't need to look at the news, we don't need to be informed, we're just concentrating on being one with the light and that's enough, we are tragically deluding ourselves and making ourselves food for fascist jaws. We are just colluding in the birth of a monstrous society which will destroy the possibilities of any kind of human evolution.
And so I also want to add to that list my book, Confronting Christofascism, Healing the Evangelical Wound. And I wrote it not just to have a look at fascism, but also for people who may have grown up as I did or been exposed to fundamentalist Christianity and have been traumatized by it or any form of religious trauma. There are tools and practices in here as well for how to deal with that trauma that you may have been left with.
So in conclusion, Carolyn, thank you so much for doing this extraordinary work and for writing this book. Please, my friends, if you buy no other book until the end of the class, buy Undaunted and give it to all of your friends, especially those friends who are beginning to become awake to the situation and are terrified of opening further because they feel so at a loss, at sea, riddled with anxiety. Because one of the great advantages of coming to Carolyn's work is that you meet in it the seasoned, sober wisdom of someone who has lived through paralysis, agony, heartbreak, denial, terrible, terrible suffering, but has found in the core of that experience some really extraordinary tools, some real nuggets of indispensable golden elder wisdom. And if I had my druthers, I would invite the UN to translate this book into all known languages and give it to all adults over 18 now to really help us all, whatever our path, whatever our religion, to rise in our human dignity, to embrace the absolutely daunting challenges that we're facing with undaunted human spiritual courage. Why did you choose that title, Undaunted? And what does it mean to you in terms of your own life now at 75, Caroline? Wow. You and I talk 3 times a week. You go through many, many difficulties in your life, which I know about. You rise to them all with rugged courage. How do you keep going with this amazing work? What are the sources of your inner strength?
Well, first of all, let me just make sure that we're clear on what undaunted means. Undaunted does not mean invincible or implacable or incapable of being extinguished or made extinct. It simply means not intimidated or discouraged by difficulty, danger, or disappointment. It means indomitable, steadfast, undeterred, audacious, courageous, undismayed, unfaltering. And some days you're not going to feel undaunted. And those are the days when you need to rest, when you need to bathe in nature, when you need to call up friends and say, we need to talk because I need support. Those are the days when you really need self-care. And a regular regimen of self-care alongside all that you are learning and accepting as an assignment is absolutely necessary. It's a very arduous task, but to live fiercely means to live passionately, to demand excellence, to live inclusively, honestly, and authentically, to live into, even knowing what the future most likely holds, to live passionately into a scenario that is unprecedented and terrifying for human beings.
And it also means to continue to act, to do your own unique sacred activism.
Right.
Because it isn't that sacred activism is bound to produce a new human race and transform everything and offer a total solution to our crisis. That's not why sacred activism is essential and important. It's because, as Viktor Frankl said, sacred activism gives you meaning.
Absolutely.
You know when you're acting from the deepest core of yourself with love and precision, guided by your inmost conscience, you know that you're helping in a very extreme situation. And every night when you go to bed, however difficult the day has been, however charged with bad news the day has been, however many times in the day you felt, oh my God, how can we be in a situation so terrible? You will be able to look at your face in the mirror and say, as far as possible, I did the best I could this day to be of real use to my fellow human beings and to the creation. So I can really taste my own dignity, my own courage, my own truth. And in tasting my dignity and courage and truth, I find meaning and my life glows from within. That is what it means to me to be undaunted and an undaunted sacred activist. I'm not talking about sacred activism at this moment as an all-purpose solution. I'm very aware that anything we propose may very well not work. But what I'm concerned about, which is what Carolyn is concerned about, is how you and I, in this unprecedented situation, can still taste joy, can still live and thrive and give and love our friends and serve the world. If we're meant to be transformers of the situation and a new world will be born from our actions, wonderful. But if we're meant to be radiant nurses at the hospice of humanity, let us turn up undaunted and fulfill our roles, fulfill our assignments with grace and humor and compassion and joy. That's the message of your book, isn't it?
It absolutely is, Andrew.
And that's why this book, Undaunted, should be in the library of every serious, loving human being, whatever path you're on at this moment. Carolyn, I love you. I'm so grateful, as always, to be with you. And I thank you for giving this interview for my Global Mystical Immersion Group, because they will really appreciate it and really appreciate you. There are many serious students in it who will find your work. And I'm still hoping that some of the others who are still resistant to what we've been trying to help them to get to will have in your witness another opportunity to wake up and see that they don't have to keep denying what's happening, that they don't have to pretend that the dark isn't here. They don't have to pretend that we're not in potentially an extinction event. But that if they can open to it and use the spiritual resources and emotional resources and natural resources that they have, that they can really find a radical new meaning to the core of their lives and go forward with humble courage. So
there is so much joy in accepting the assignment. You won't always be happy, but you will find joy.
Bless you.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.